Afflictive States, Chapter 9. In maintaining awareness, we discover the lack of separation between happiness and suffering. What that means in a practical way is that whether there's happiness or whether there's suffering, we can be totally at ease and serene. The term afflictive states refers to thoughts, emotions, and sensations that are experienced as disturbing. Many of us have felt overwhelmed at times by deeply distressing states. We can't stand the pain and suffering, and we keep looking for a way out of the torment of these afflictive states, but it may be that a way out has never been described to us in a simple way. When we rest as awareness, we find our way out. We discover our essence, which is unaffected by any kind of emotional state. When we look with discrimination, we can see that whatever happens in our life, even if in the moment it seems like a terrible tragedy, really cannot alter or change our awareness at all. Awareness is absolutely constant. It never changes. In this discovery, we find true freedom and tremendous compassion for ourselves and others. We find the effortless wisdom to know how to take care of ourselves and the planet we live on. We discover our basic human goodness. This is what the Great Freedom Teaching offers. Mastery of afflictive states doesn't come from cultivating positive states or transforming negative states into positive states. True mastery comes from resting the mind in the pure awareness that is its essence, and then seeing whatever appears as a form of that awareness. Our mind is naturally wise and helpful, and is inseparable from limitless, timeless, pure awareness. When we try to micromanage the mind by attempting to modify or censor what occurs in it, we cut ourselves off from our inherently peaceful, happy, and beneficial nature. All appearances, whether we describe them as afflictive, negative, or positive, are only the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing more. Since they're made of the same awareness, all appearances are equal, and since they're evanescent, mirage-like appearances that have no independent reality, there's nothing to be gained or lost from them. Rather than resisting or desiring these appearances, or trying to change them in any way, we simply rest as they arise and recognize in each appearance the pure awareness which is the essence of our own being. In maintaining awareness, all points of view are resolved, but not through making negative points of view into positive points of view. Nothing about ourselves needs to be changed. Now, when we first hear that we don't need to get rid of negative thoughts and emotions, many people think, "How can that be? If I just let my thoughts and emotions run wild, I'll turn into a barbarian. Everyone will find out what I'm really like." But as we begin to develop confidence and awareness, far from turning into a barbarian, we discover the deep peacefulness that is our inherent nature. And as we continue to rest, we begin to manifest the profound wisdom that comes from being undistracted by anything that appears. All the thoughts and emotions will be whatever they are, but they will not disturb us any longer. Now, when I speak about extremely afflictive states, I'm not talking as a philosopher. I'm talking as someone who's experienced very difficult and disturbing emotional states. For years, I tried to overcome my afflictive thoughts and emotions through all kinds of means: achievements, philosophy, psychology, intellectual understanding, prayer, socializing, sex, alcohol, and marijuana, to name the main ones. However, when I got into a particularly disturbing situation 27 years ago, none of those approaches worked anymore. I was in a state of incredible fear and couldn't find comfort in any of the belief systems or remedies I'd previously relied on. I found no relief in anything I'd ever learned, in any self-help technique, or in any person I knew. In the midst of that crisis, I somehow discovered that all the painful emotional states had as their underlying basis a vast, infinite, pure space that is completely free from suffering. At the time, I didn't know exactly how to describe that realization. I just knew that to rest in that space brought instantaneous relief from the pain. In fact, the more I rested there, the more I saw that it gave the same relief in all experiences, whether positive or negative. The relief wasn't separate from what appeared. It was the root of the appearance and included the appearance. The more I rested as that relief, the more a warm sense of well-being began to pervade everything. Gradually, I discovered the ability to be in all situations without impediment and remain in complete ease no matter what was occurring. This was the seed that has now grown into the Great Freedom Teaching. Great Freedom teaches that thoughts and emotions don't have an independent existence. They're nothing but ephemeral appearances within awareness and have no power of their own. Most of us have learned to use our mind in a very limited way to describe ourselves and what's going on in the world. But when we have only this limited relationship with the mind, we won't have the zest or energy for the marvelous contributions we're capable of making to the world and to ourselves. Even if outwardly we seem to be very accomplished people, we'll be withering on the vine compared to what we could be if we weren't trying to micromanage all our thoughts and emotions. If we spend our lives battling with our thoughts and emotions as if they had an independent nature, we'll never see them for what they truly are. In boxing, two fighters try to pummel each other into unconsciousness. Well, when we spend our lives immersed in the grueling practice of trying to get rid of afflictive states, it's like having a boxing match with our minds. Taking our thoughts and emotions to be enemies that we're afraid of, we feel that we need to beat them into submission, always afraid that if we don't, they're going to wear us down with their jabs day after day and finally knock us out for good. To analyze thoughts and emotions, reject them or try to fix them with different approaches serves only to strengthen their apparent reality. We've really been boxing only with shadows, but every attempt to change or improve our thoughts only gives the shadows more seeming substance. We're always looking for something that's going to make us feel better. In wanting to improve ourselves, we might say, "Tomorrow I'm going to be a good person. I'm not going to get mad and blow my top." Then the next day comes and we just can't keep the thoughts and emotions in place and the top blows off right in the boss's face. We want to achieve freedom from negative thoughts and emotions by reshaping them into positive thoughts and emotions, but this really can't be done permanently. Thoughts and emotions are inherently spontaneous and unpredictable. Trying to control them is like trying to hold on to the reflection of the moon in a pond. There's nothing to hold on to, and there's no you to do the holding. Both the subject and the object are like a mirage. Perhaps we'll buy a self-help book that tells us how to deal with depression and low self-esteem. We'll feel happy and hopeful for a while, but when we set the book aside, what happens? The old negative thoughts just come rushing back in. So we pick up another self-help book that has other solutions, and the same thing happens again because we're simply applying one point of view to change another. It's a fruitless endeavor, and it never really works. We should be aware that it's not only the negative thoughts and emotions that are disturbing. All thoughts and emotions are in a sense disturbing if we don't recognize that at their basis they're all vivid appearances of awareness. We try to keep the ones we like, but we can't. And we try to get rid of the ones we don't like, but we can't do that either, so both ways it's painful. In maintaining awareness, we discover the lack of separation between happiness and suffering. We see that, whether there's happiness or whether there's suffering, we can be totally at ease and serene. How? We rest as the awareness that is the fundamental nature of both happiness and suffering, and there we discover real peace. We find the ease of being that is unaffected by any emotional state. This means we'll have many new options in life. We don't need to cling to old assumptions concerning happiness and suffering when they come up in us. We have a much more profound understanding that however our own joys or sufferings might appear, their underlying basis is the same. In the beginning, for most people, it's easier to momentarily rest as awareness when positive and neutral points of view appear, and more difficult to rest when negative points of view are present. As we practice resting with positive and neutral states, our ability to rest increases. Eventually, we'll be able to rest more and more with the negative states as well. When negative states arise, it can be very difficult at first to enjoy the ease of our being because everything in us is screaming, "No, no, this can't possibly be awareness." It might even seem completely impossible to rest with states such as panic, anger, hatred, confusion, and jealousy, but that doesn't mean it is impossible. We've just trained ourselves to believe that these emotions are a threat. But in resting as awareness, we can understand the non-threatening nature of the afflictive emotions. By repeatedly resting as awareness for short moments, repeated many times, we support ourselves in maintaining awareness even when afflictive states appear. A lot of times we've looked for ways to get rid of our afflictive states through antidotes. However, even if we find a way to drown the afflictive states for a while with a bottle of vodka or by smoking a joint or taking an ecstasy pill, when it wears off, what happens? The afflictive states simply come flooding back. Maybe the antidotes we use aren't as extreme as the ones I just mentioned. Instead of taking drugs or getting drunk, perhaps we watch television all day, look at pornography, play endless electronic games, sleep or eat too much. Or perhaps we call friends and gossip, work extra long hours, or engage in other activities that distract us from our pain. Whatever the modes of escape may be, they're all antidotes, and none of them can fully resolve our negative thoughts and emotions. No matter how bound up you are in any of these afflictive states, I would urge you to avoid using antidotes and just rest. If you feel like you're really in the grip of something, reach out for support from the Four Comforts, and then do your best to rest as awareness and get to know the essence of who you are. Rest in the relaxed nature of your own being. See everything as an expression of that pure being, and whatever is appearing will naturally resolve itself. One could continue to give meaning and significance to the stories we have, but why bother? One story generates another. All the stories about our perceived deficiencies start getting fired up. I'm not good enough, or I don't want to fall in love because then that person might abandon me, or I can't get the job I really want because I'm not competent enough, or I can't do what I really want because I don't have enough money. The more we limit ourselves with such stories, the more suffering they generate. We can also use our stories to try to grasp for more peace of mind, but this only increases the restlessness of our mind. Using stories to try to settle the mind is like trying to diminish the bubbles in a bubble bath by using a mixer to stir up the water. One could continue to give meaning and significance to the stories we have, but why bother? One story generates another. All the stories about our perceived deficiencies start getting fired up. I'm not good enough, or I don't want to fall in love because then that person might abandon me, or I can't get the job I really want because I'm not competent enough, or I can't do what I really want because I don't have enough money. The more we limit ourselves with such stories, the more suffering they generate. We can also use our stories to try to grasp for more peace of mind, but this only increases the restlessness of our mind. Using stories to try to settle the mind is like trying to diminish the bubbles in a bubble bath by using a mixer to stir up the water. Many people believe that they're subject to moods and that moods are created by thoughts, and therefore thoughts hold a terrible power over their lives. These different moods come into our minds like gloomy weather patterns, and as a result, our own well-being suffers. Then we make sure others suffer as well, right? We might wake up in the morning with the thought, "I'm such a rotten person that I'm definitely going to have a crummy day." We then respond to that thought as if it had complete power over us, and lo and behold, we find it comes true. And then we inflict our crummy mood on whomever we see. In a mood-based life, every day is like a roller coaster ride of ups and downs. We have happy thoughts at the top of the roller coaster, and then we have a sad thought, and all of a sudden the roller coaster plummets. If we respond with fear, the ride gets even scarier, and pretty soon we'll find ourselves in the dark tunnel of horrors. By staying on this roller coaster and believing every shift of mood reflects on who we are, we become blind to our deepest inner reality, which is never affected by any mood, thought, or emotion. Encased in fear and pain, we become numb to our own suffering and the suffering of others. The truth is that thoughts and emotions never have the power to rule us. It's only the way we react to them that seems to vest them with power. The underlying basis of all thoughts and emotions is the clear light of awareness, the completely relaxed essence of mind that's always at ease. Awareness is synonymous with wisdom, love, and energy. Through resting as the essence of our being, our life is infused with those qualities, and we find we always know what to do and how to act. We all have a choice about how we use our minds, either to try to change the thoughts and emotions that appear within the mind, or to rest in the pure being that is the mind's basic space, our own native superintelligence. To understand this is very important, because the first way leads to confusion and suffering, while the second way leads to real freedom. Resting as awareness takes us outside the parameters of a mood-based life into the discovery of the timeless pure awareness that is our true nature. If we spend our whole life giving meaning to our thoughts and emotions, our lips will freeze into a frown and all the light will go out of our eyes. It won't be long before we're sitting in the dining hall at a senior care facility complaining about our arthritis and poor bowel movements and pointing out everybody's faults. "Oh, will you look at the blue hair on that one? And that lady over there is the one who cheated at bingo." Nothing will change, but now we'll be 80 years old, our bodies will be falling apart, and we'll continue to be lost in all these stories. True well-being doesn't come from a process of selection where we say, "This is what is good about me and this is what is bad." We are not divided into one part that's fundamentally flawed and sinful and another part called awareness that's wonderful and pure. Many of us have been raised to believe that we are sinners and that we're inherently flawed in some way, but at some point we have to realize that those ideas are completely untrue and have no power. Otherwise, we'll be in prison for life, whether we're living as a monk, a housewife, a corporate executive, or a prisoner at San Quentin. The real prison bars are in the mind. Freedom from imprisonment is found when we recognize that the afflictive states are already free because their soul essence is awareness. Because we take ourselves to be a personal identity that is destroyed at death, anything that seems threatening to that personal identity makes us feel very vulnerable. We may be afraid of earthquakes, tornadoes, political turmoil, violence, and terrorism because these things threaten our bodily existence. The only way to resolve the grip of fear is to come to know that we are not ultimately dependent on anything for our existence, not even the survival of the body. The fears many of us have, getting seriously ill, growing old, dying, not having enough money, being subjected to the negative opinions of others, all drop away if we maintain awareness, for awareness can never be hurt in the least by any outcome. When we see that nothing can affect our well-being, not even death, then we truly have a choice in life. We're no longer collapsed into an idea of a poor me who's a victim of suffering. We're free to live as the limitless, timeless beings we truly are. Whether you've done all sorts of horrible things in your life or are a paragon of saintly virtue, this moment is equal for everyone. A room can be dark for a very long time, but the moment the light switch is flipped on, the darkness disappears instantaneously. So just relax, smile, and enjoy yourself. That's how you're meant to be in all situations. When these stormy, afflictive states come up, just relax completely. There's nothing you need to do about them. They disperse in and of themselves like the flight path of a bird in the sky and have never for a moment been separate from pure awareness. If you rest for short moments repeated many times, you will see that this is the case. Question. This is the first time I've heard the term afflictive states, and I'm not sure to what exactly you are referring when you use the term. Could you maybe give some specific examples of emotions or states that you consider afflictive? Candace. Sure, I'd be happy to make this as clear as possible. The term afflictive states refers to thoughts, emotions, and sensations that are experienced as disturbing. The first category of afflictive states includes all the thoughts and emotional states related to desire. We really need to understand the importance of desire in the human experience. There's nothing wrong with desire in itself, because the ultimate desire is to get to know ourselves as awareness. However, desire or yearning generally means the longing for things such as good health, staying young, food, money, sex, work, relationships, leisure, or whatever it might be. Desire comes coupled with the belief that by getting what we desire, we will have well-being. Holding to this belief leads to an endless no-win cycle of continuing to desire, yet never fully attaining well-being. Even though over and over again our experience is that the desire does not bring us what we're seeking, we continue to desire anyway. We could say that the blind repetition of desiring is a form of insanity because we're doing the same thing over and over again and yet expecting different results. The second primary afflictive state is aggression, which could also be called anger or hate. Anger or hate towards people, places, or things is a form of aggression that we see played out in families, communities, nations, and in the world. Many times, though, aggression is not only directed towards outward objects, but also inwardly towards ourselves. We're engaging in anger and hatred by hating our own thoughts, emotions, and sensations, and feeling that we need to change them. As a result, we may be angry at ourselves, and this only leads to anger towards others. The third primary afflictive state includes conceit, smugness, pride, and arrogance, which are traits that lead people to have exaggerated estimations of themselves and their opinions. Proud and arrogant persons think that they know what is right, and if others disagree with them, they're convinced that the other person must be wrong. They express and defend these very strong opinions in such a way that they do not honor or acknowledge the opinions of others. Close-mindedness, which is traditionally called ignorance, is the fourth primary afflictive state. When we are close-minded, we cut ourselves off from the recognition of awareness. We say, "There might be awareness, but I don't want to go there. I want to continue to indulge or avoid all my thoughts, emotions, and sensations. Unless we can rest as conceit, pride, or arrogance, we'll never be able to accept the contributions and suggestions of the teacher, the teaching, and the community in which we involve ourselves. To accept the contributions of the teacher means that we accept that there is another person just like us who is already resting as awareness without trying to do so. And because they have realized the wisdom powers of awareness, they can skillfully share with us how to rest as they do. The last afflictive state is envy and jealousy. Envy could be defined as spite and resentment at seeing the success of another, and jealousy as mental uneasiness from suspicion or fear of rivalry. It is really a hell realm to continually be circling around in our own thoughts, emotions, and experiences, taking them to be real and trying to do something about them. When we're constantly trying to indulge, avoid, or replace thoughts and emotions with something better, we can never get out of this realm. Wow, these disturbing states are looking kind of bleak, aren't they? The very, very important point to make about afflictive states is for us to not reject what is appearing. To not reject afflictive states means that when they come up, we rest as awareness rather than acting on them or wanting them to go away. Resting as awareness is not an avoidance or a rejection of something, and it is not suppression or repression. Afflictive states and the power of wisdom are one and the same. Even though that might seem inconceivable at present, by the power of resting as awareness, we prove it to ourselves. We come to see in our own experience that with all these exceedingly troublesome states like fear, anger, aggression, envy, jealousy, conceit, pride, or desire, there is really nothing there, just as there's really nothing substantial in a mirage. However, we'll never see that as long as we indulge, avoid, or reject what is appearing. When we rest as these afflictive states and do not reject them, they dissolve into themselves, and when they dissolve into themselves, they become something wonderful instead of something terrible. Like a lotus blooming out of the mud that doesn't have a speck of mud on it, so too, out of these totally afflictive states appears this totally magnificent power of wisdom, totally untainted in any way by the seemingly negative appearances. When afflictive states are left unrejected, they become spacious and expansive because the nature of awareness is completely open and unobstructed. When they come up and we rest as awareness, then we allow the openness that is inherent in disturbing emotions to become evident. Aren't openness, good cheer, and warm-heartedness towards others a greater benefit to us than feeling tormented by disturbing states? By resting as awareness rather than engaging in afflictive states, we begin to feel more and more compassion until we feel compassion all the time. Rather than acting on afflictive states, we rest when they come up and loving kindness appears from within them. Similarly, afflictive states are transformed into lucidity and luminosity. Our mind becomes totally clear and everything we see becomes luminous and radiant. Lastly, when disturbing states are left unrejected, they dissolve back into themselves and appearing from within these states are fairness and a balanced view that produce insight about how to skillfully handle all situations. When we rest as awareness for short moments repeated many times, all of these states dissolve into themselves, and what appears from within them is bliss, compassion, loving kindness, lucidity, and a balanced view. This is amazing. This is the true meaning of non-duality. Bliss, compassion, loving kindness, clarity, and a balanced view are the fundamental condition of afflictive states.